The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
We have made it to Atlanta, first day of SEC Media Days, and right now we've had a couple of coaches already at the podium. Lane Kiffin currently speaking. Brian Kelly was there earlier. The SEC Media Days began nearly 3.5 hours ago with the commissioner of the SEC, and that was unusual that everyone was waiting on the commissioner. Usually they're waiting on coaches, especially the new coaches, but many were curious what Greg Sankey would say in relation to expansion rumors and all that, and we will certainly get into that as we work our way through the week. A number of guests here, including Lane Kiffin later on. We will also take your phone call, something that we haven't had a chance, at least for me, to talk to you in a couple weeks. I have been all over the place. We'll talk more about that. But we are delighted to welcome Scott Raboli. We won't keep Scott waiting because I think Scott, in the same building, maybe it was across the street, you had the famous follow of who was it? It was Jeff Foxworthy and Ric Flair.
I was between Jeff Foxworthy and Ric Flair. Yes, yeah, that was quite a task there between those two guys.
Today the act is much easier. Okay. It's good to see. Let's before we get to Brian Kelly, and certainly we want to get your thoughts on that. Your out of curiosity, what did you take away from the commissioner's State of the Union address here today?
Yeah, as you said, you know, you're kind of hanging on his words to see what he's going to say, what might happen. I mean, we were in Media Days last year when the Texas-Oklahoma sure. news broke. So, you know, he's asked about expansion. He's asked about the playoffs. Greg was a little more boastful than – about as boastful as Greg can be. You know, someone asked him – yeah, are you a Super League? He said yes. And he said, you know, did you get the better two teams to join your league compared to USC and UCLA? He said yes. And he also pretty much just said, you know, hey, 4-8-12 team playoff. But one thing it's not going to be is Greg Sankey doesn't like an 8-team playoff with 6 automatic qualifiers. So that's not going to happen, I think. So he's like, we're very comfortable where we are in the SEC. And like I said, it sounds a little boastful, but the SEC has a right to feel comfortable and feel like everyone else is kind of scrambling to get where they are.
Yeah, he clearly is not over what happened last year in the aftermath of Texas and Oklahoma. He's still not happy the way he was treated, I don't think, by other commissioners and by people in general, because you could hear a little bit of the snark in relation to the CFP here as well.
Yeah, and you know, he went to Indianapolis. Yeah, they couldn't come to a consensus on where to go with the playoff from here. And he's like, "Fine, you guys want to do that? We already got half the teams in the you know, from his perspective, half the teams in the playoff are SEC teams, and it was guaranteed to be a champion." And they talked about one of the semifinals being here in Atlanta, the Peach Bowl. I'm sure he feels pretty confident about at least having one SEC team here again this year. So, yeah, And the conference is getting more powerful in general, certainly the SEC and the Big Ten, as the NCAA's power decreases. And I think he's very happy to wield that power.
And I'm not sure he's going to be thrilled with one of the comments that he made that is probably going viral the most. And certainly I think people in this room aren't paying attention to it, but a lot of other people were, especially the times that we currently live in. He was asked if the SEC adding OU and Texas trumps Big Ten adding USC and UCLA. And he said, yes, but I'm not sure if I want to use the word trump these days. And yeah, you could listen to that in real time, not give it a second thought. You can listen to that maybe in New York or California and say, I understand where he's coming from, but when your constituency is the ruby red South, Some have pushed back on that. They did, there were a lot of, as you know, you live in a state where your football coach, your former football coach, was particularly close to the former president. It's a delicate balancing act, regardless of where you stand politically.
Oh yeah, and yeah, that was kind of like that was one of those things he said, like it's kind of going, that's kind of edgy for Greg Sankey, yeah. You know, a little bit. And I can see this is a very red part of the country, so I can see that's not going to play well with some people. Not going to keep them from pulling for their SEC teams or wanting the SEC to do well. But I was surprised that he went there a little bit. By the way, Brian Kelly used to be in politics. He actually worked on Gary Hart's campaign. Many years ago.
You know, I remember talking to Scott Woodward about that, another politician.
Oh, yes.
Let me correct myself. Another person who's been in politics. Speaking of LSU, let's use that as the pivot. I thought Brian Kelly tried humor today. He tried a couple of different things. How do you think he played in the room?
I thought he handled himself pretty much in the way it was important to. I think, you know, he showed he was kind of businesslike, but not too full of himself. You know, he was asked the question in your best Southern accent.
Yeah.
You know, what do you think about, you know, these things? Say, hey, I've got a Boston/Midwest/Louisiana accent now. So he kind of poked a little fun at himself at, of course, that viral speech that he made at the basketball game, which I was there. I didn't quite hear what people heard, but it's different, as you know, being in the broadcast business. It's different on a mic when you separate out all the background noise and people were going rabid and trying to make himself heard over that. Anyway, yeah, I thought he was self-deprecating when he needed to be, but also, let's be honest. Since Nick Saban left, the last two coaches LSU had, it was very easy to poke fun at them. Les Miles and all his goofy antics, and Ed Orgeron with the you know, he I wrote in my column today, you know, people acted like he was a kid, came off the screen of The Waterboy, you know, as one of those characters in that movie, and a caricature. I think, you know, LSU needs someone to be a little more serious, to be taken a little more seriously. Like in my lifetime, the coaches with the most respect at LSU were Nick Saban and Bill Arnsparger, and guys are a little more no-nonsense, a little more, you know, business-like, and I think that's what LSU needs from Brian Kelly.
Well, that's what you got, because he's certainly all business. Let me ask you, before we go full board on Brian Kelly, there was a lot of speculation about what Ed Orgeron was going to do. It's late July. What is Ed Orgeron going to do this year?
You know, I think he's popped up at a lot of different places, having fun in Cabo San Lucas, at Miami, at other different schools. I think he's been at Notre Dame, camps and things like that. I don't think we're going to see anything from him. I doubt that he's going to be a head coach again. That he wants that pressure. He's walking away with almost $17 million from LSU.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, and I think he's been trying to get his sons want to get into coaching. I think he's trying to use his many contacts. And Ed's been a lot of places from coast to coast and knows a lot of coaches. And I think he's trying to use that to help them get started. And I can see him being more in that ambassadorial, you know, more kind of a coaching emeritus role. I don't really think he's going to get back
into coaching. There was some talk about television, but
I think he would like to get into television. Okay. I just don't see that being.
Yeah, I mean, you work at a network like I do. You hear things. Doesn't mean they're accurate, but my guess is that he's talked to everybody and he's still waiting for the offer.
Yeah, it's hard to see Ed carrying being on a pregame show or working a whole game. You know, maybe. More good luck to him. You know, maybe he'll go call some live golf tournaments or something. You know,
I hear they're hiring.
<That's right. laughs>
We're talking here with Scott Rabelais. Scott, the question that everyone wants to know is, you know, what's the quarterback situation look like, and what's this team going to look like?
Well, it's a you go from the just kind of ridiculous situation they wound up in the Texas Bowl, having to play a converted wide receiver at quarterback against Kansas State, to now you have four guys, including a freshman, Walker Howard. You got Miles Brennan, who's been here forever. I mean, he was Danny Etling's backup.
That's
in 2017. I know it's hard to think about that, but it was true. And they got him to come back out of the transfer portal. Kelly got him to come back, but then you got Jaden Daniels to come, who's got the most experience of anybody coming from Arizona State. He has the most experience as a starter, and you got Garrett Nussmeier, who's been on the team, and you have Walker Howard, who's a freshman, Jamie Howard's son, who you don't know. I don't think anyone expects to get the job. They're all kind of starting on the same footing. I mean, Nussmeier started some games. Miles didn't play at all last year. Nussmeier started some games and had some games that he played, but they're all kind of starting under this new system under Brian Kelly and Mike Denbrock, the offensive coordinator. So experience-wise tells me it's going to be Miles Brennan because he's been here so long, but then the type of quarterback Daniels is, more of a run-pass threat, I think that's the kind of offense they would like to – the kind of guy they'd like to have running this offense at LSU, and that leans you to more towards Daniels. I think you kind of take – I think, like I said, take Walker Howard out of the equation. So I don't know. It's going to be very interesting. And what LSU does – I know what LSU doesn't need is to be searching for an offensive identity as the season goes on. They need to establish that as quickly as they can, which they didn't do in the spring. It was just laying down the offense, getting them all familiar with it, and then moving forward from there.
Scott, there'll be predictions at the end of the week, and I would think LSU will fare moderately well, not as well as they used to fare. But what do you think? You know the personnel, and you know the schedule.
You know, I think LSU's got a chance. You know, they start with Florida State in the Superdome. They've got some home game. Open up with some softer games, including a game against Southern, a crosstown rival playing LSU for the first time.
Wow.
Tiger Stadium, I think, will be full with LSU and Southern fans. And Southern will win the Battle of the Bands. They're really good at that. And then, they got Miss State at home, which I think is a game they'll be favored, and I think they probably should win, no disrespect to State. Go to Auburn in week five. What's Auburn going to be like? Is that a program?
No idea.
Yeah, I mean, they're always the wild card, right? I remember the game a few years ago there. It was like talking to someone before the game. The loser of this game is probably getting fired. Yeah, Gus or Les, and it was Les.
And that
Miles.
Was accurate.
Yeah, it absolutely was. So I think they have a chance to – if they can start 5-0, they have a chance to have a pretty good record. I think it tops out at 9-3 or something like that. I think that would be really good. I see a lot of the predictions say 6 wins again. I think they'll do better than that. I think the defensive line will be better. They have playmakers on offense. They just have to, you got to have a healthy season out of Kayshon Boutte, who missed half of last year but still led the team in touchdown receptions. Obviously, have to identify the right quarterback. Got to be better in the secondary. But I think Kelly's a good coach and tactician, and I think he'll get more than just the minimum out of them, which would be to go 500.
Well, we will hold you to that, Scott. You know how important these predictions are at the end of July.
Well, they'll be picked mid of the pack of the division.
But I think I think I don't know whether it's LSU, but it seems like the optimism is higher than you would expect after a completely disastrous season. But it was a disastrous season. And LSU won games they shouldn't have, and nearly ran Alabama. Right. So I mean, you just don't know.
No, you don't. And there's still talent there. Yeah. Is it what Alabama and Georgia have right now? No. Is it what LSU's had just a few years ago? No. But there's still a talent to put a scare into some people and win some games.
Scott Rabelais, thank you, Scott. We'll let you get back to
always a pleasure. Thank
whatever
you
were doing.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're gone for a couple of days, and you forget the nuances of how to do a radio show. I was very happy, but now I'm remembering. I got a little cheat sheet here. Anyway, they say when the music starts, I was listening to the music. It sounded pretty good. Welcome back. We're live at SEC Media Days. Dave Matter with us. Missouri Dave.
Yeah.
This is the crowd. The crowds are here.
Oh, yeah. They're all here for the Tigers.
So what I love this guy. He's fun to talk to. But then I keep hearing he needs to win. I guess is that required at Missouri these days?
I think so. This program has been essentially 500 over the last 6 years since Gary Pinkel retired. And it's constantly one step forward, one step back. And he had a really good debut year, that COVID year. He went 5-5 in an SEC-only schedule. But then last year, 6-7, lose a bowl game. It's just not – you don't feel great momentum on the field. And he's recruited really well. You know, people really like him. He's got great charisma. He's good at things like this. But you're right. It all comes down to what you do on Saturdays. And this is a pivotal year for him. It, not a make-or-break type year, but this program needs to – needs to turn the corner. That means just winning more than six games.
You mentioned recruiting, and it does. I'm watching it from a couple of hundred miles away. Yeah. It seems like he's getting, but is he getting enough recruits? I know he's getting some big recruits.
Yeah, he's done really well this year in the transfer portal. Back-to-back top 20 classes, which has not been done at Missouri since the onset of recruiting rankings. So he's done a really nice job there. I think what kind of holds back the expectations maybe for this year is that quarterback position. And when you don't have a guy there, you don't know who it is yet, and we're sitting here in late July, and it's still uncertain. All those other positions and all those other upgrades you make everywhere else, kind of fall to the wayside because you don't know who the quarterback is. So he did go out and get a four-star guy, Sam Horn, from right around here. In Georgia, who's also probably going to be taken in the MLB draft here tonight or tomorrow, but expectations are he's most likely going to play football at Missouri. He's recruited really well, but you got to see it translate on the field.
Well, Dave Matter covers Missouri, and in terms of what he has to do. Now, I bring this up because new athletic director,
yep.
Not that new, but still new.
Right.
I don't know what else is new in Columbia, but a new athletic director is often not a good signal to a coach who is laboring in 500 land.
Yeah, and, I don't think, Desiree Reed-Francois has been there right about a year. She got the job last August. I don't think she came in wanting to change everything necessarily. Now, she did hire a new basketball coach. And
I think everyone hired a new basketball coach.
New trajectory there. Yeah, you're right, in this league. I think what would work in her best interest is for Eli to have a great year this year and to keep building. And so they're not – so Missouri's not get back into the habit of what they were before Gary Pinkel is flipping coaches every 4 years. Because right. You never make headway, especially in this league, when you're doing that.
In terms of drink, being objective, and I admit, when you see a guy like that compared to some,
yeah,
it's just fun to talk to.
Oh, sure.
I don't cover him. I am the worst person in the world to judge a coach because I see him four or five times a year.
Yeah.
It's friendly. I'm not waiting for him after practice and having to deal with him after a loss.
Right.
But what would if the season doesn't go better than – the experts aren't exactly knocking right. The door down for Missouri to win 9 or 10 games.
Right.
How do you make that decision?
Well, I think you got to show progress. You got to show that they're building and things are getting better and not going backward. And that's I don't think that's just record, because the schedule is a little bit tougher this year. It's a tough start. In the first month, you go to Auburn and you go to Kansas State, and then you go to Florida, and those are winnable games. But you add them up, and it's a little tougher stretch, especially when you don't know who your quarterback is on July 18th. So there are some challenges in the way, but I think they've got to kind of do what they didn't do last year. They did not finish well at the end of last season. And even the year before that, his first year, they got trounced at the end of the year. Lose to Army in a bowl game. They just didn't end with any kind of momentum. And they still recruited well despite that. So just got to see more results. I don't think his job's in jeopardy or anything like that. He's still only 2 years in. And that first year was it was COVID and it was a mess. And they couldn't even have preseason camp or spring practices. But, yeah, I think everyone wants to see some progress. They need to see some more fans in the seats too. Missouri they didn't draw 60,000 for a single game last year. I don't think they had 50,000. Everybody makes a lot of money in this league. And Missouri's got to make a little bit more to be able to be more competitive.
They finally, with everything going crazy with expansion, I still get questions about Missouri.
I do too.
I want to know what you get though, because we're 10 years in.
Right.
How is this working?
I look at it two different ways. One, it's been a challenge. For one, the basketball program, which they thought going into the SEC, okay, this will be a strength, this will be one of our pillars, and it hasn't been. They've been now. I think Dennis Gates can be a good coach and build something there, but it just the results haven't been there for a sport they were counting on. Football, early success with Gary Pinkle. Come here to Atlanta 2 years in a row. After that, fall off, and just not as competitive. Resource wise, they're building facilities all the time. They're bringing in the money, but that's money that everybody in this league is bringing in. So, you're not really making headway there. So it's a challenge. I think they're learning that. They've been through sort of their fourth athletic director since being in the league. Constant turnover is not a great way to build and to move forward and to go up, you got to pass somebody. Who's Missouri passing in the SEC in all those tiers?
Missouri's being passed.
It does seem that way, yeah, and that's why it's a.
Can Missouri compete with NIL?
They can. It's a state with two major media markets that has, compared to other places in this league,
compared to
the footprint.
You know what I'm asking.
But those two cities, St. Louis and Kansas City, also have pro teams that people spend their money on.
Right.
That's always going to be a challenge for Missouri. It's not like the state of Arkansas where the Hogs are the number one attraction. Missouri is not the number one attraction. Mizzou is not in Missouri. So they are up against it there. Eli is working really hard on NIL and doing what he can to just raise awareness for it. And they got off to a little bit slow start there. They've got a collective going. They're following the trends of what everybody else is doing. But it's all about, can you raise enough money? And that's going to be a challenge.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And lately, it's passion, too.
Yep.
How much are you willing to sacrifice? Anyway,
right.
Dave, we will continue this conversation. I don't think it's going away.
Do my best.
Thanks so much. Great to see you. Dave Matter, one of the greats. And always good to see him here on the show. And we will be in Missouri this year.
All right.
That's a guarantee.
Good deal.
Can't wait to see you there. Let's take a break. We'll talk about what Lane Kiffin had to say here in just a moment.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we're talking to Michael Katz, who covers the Ole Miss Rebels. And, Michael, we talked to you, I think, during the College World Series. You were locked down in Omaha for probably seemingly the rest of your life, but you finally got out. We're glad to see you here. You've had a chance to talk to Lane Kiffin in a private setting and obviously watch him at the public. Give us the lay of the land on Coach Kiffin.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting kind of time for Ole Miss just based on all the success they had last year and everything they lost. And Matt Corral, Sam Williams, all those superstars in this era of college football with the transfer portal. And, a lot of coaches have been openly against it. Lane really sort of has embraced it and has decided to, build his program that way, at least for now. And you look at the things they brought in, Jackson Dart and Michael Trigg and Zach Evans and guys like that, and that's really kind of been the talk this whole offseason is how do those puzzle pieces fit? The talent looks really, really good. But how does it all fit together when, Troy comes around and when that gauntlet – of the SEC schedule starts. I think Lane is as curious as all of us are to see how it all kind of works.
Let's talk about covering Lane Kiffin, and I know him pretty well, and he's really a smart guy, really almost cerebral in a way in my experiences with him. But that's not the perception. I mean, you think he's a late night comedian. What's it like to be around him?
Kind of depends on the day.
Yeah.
If today was a really good example of if you get him at the right time, he's hilarious, and he will give you some really good insight, and he will have some good one-liners. The first question that was asked to him today was about Nick Saban, and he had that great line of, as Kirby Smart used to say, you come up here and you always talk about Alabama. That was the very first thing he said, and he was cracking jokes up there. He was kind of doing the comedian thing, but, during the season, things get a little bit more intense, but for the most part, I think he's been pretty good to work with. If there's one thing you know about Lane, it's that he takes pride on kind of dishing it out the way he sees it. And there's been a lot of things to sort of dish about, whether it's NIL, the transfer portal, conference realignment, all these sorts of things. And he has given very blunt opinions on them. And there's something kind of refreshing about that.
I think he was somewhat the unsung major player in the whole Jimbo Saban deal because – I mean, depending on how anyone heard it, it was really about him and publicly about him and Jimbo back in the winter. But a lot of people knew that there was more going on, and there was a level of uneasiness toward Fisher for I heard somebody at the SEC said to Jimbo Fisher, like, why are you getting in this deal with Lane Kiffin? But it almost seems like nobody took it seriously enough because it happened again, and it happened much worse.
Yeah, no, it's when that whole thing was happening, I think the first thing we saw from Lane, because everybody checks his Twitter to see, how he's going to weigh in, and I think it was a gif of someone opening popcorn, and he was just watching like the rest of us, and, he was asked about it, and I think he'd said something to the effect of he'd never seen anything, kind of like this in terms of that, situation between Jimbo and Nick Saban, and I think there's a part of Lane that people like that he's relatable in that he can sort of, the way he sees things is not always dissimilar from how we see things. And he's watching this whole thing unfold like the rest of us. And I think there's just something nice and refreshing for people about someone kind of putting it all out there and not hiding from it.
Let's talk about on the field here in our remaining moments. Last year, we all know what a big year it was for the Rebels. How close can this group come to what we saw last year?
I think this team can be really, really good. But a lot of what happened last year was because of Matt Corral and the mm-hmm. great things that he did. There's the open quarterback, debate of Jackson Dart and Luke Altmyer. I think most of us think it's probably going to end up being Jackson Dart. I don't think you bring a guy in like that if he's not going to, eventually be your guy. But Matt had a lot on his plate, and Matt did a lot of really important things for Ole Miss, and I think getting production there is really going to kind of be the key there. The front of that schedule looks a lot easier than the back, and if they can kind of get situated those first six games and be 5-1, 6-0, whatever it is, and they've kind of figured out the quarterback situation, I think they can have a special season. Is it 10 wins? That had never happened in a regular season at Ole Miss before, but I think this team can be really good.
I think, by the way, I agree with you, but I think by the end of the week, though, I will have heard similar comments because I think there are reasons to believe a lot of schools can be good. But Ole Miss is different. I think they're much higher. They're much closer to the upper division than they are where they had previously been. Michael, it's a pleasure to continue our conversations. You've been a great treat for us to get to know as somebody who looks like they've got – I always like young guys that – it looked like they've got stardom written all over them, and you do.
I appreciate that, Paul. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Michael. It's still good to see you. Michael Cash joining us. And we are going to take a break. We're going to do something we haven't had a chance to do in a while, and we'll run to the phone calls. We will continue with more guests in just a few minutes. More of your phone calls. And if you want to give us a call right now, 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we are back. Let's get to some phone calls here at 855-242-7285. Let's begin with John in Louisville. Hey, John.
Hey, Paul. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
I've got to ask you, did the HR department at ESPN call you and tell you you were out of paid time off benefits?
No, but when things settle down, I'll give you a travelogue of what I've been doing. I normally don't take that much time off. I normally take the week before media days, as you may or may not remember.
Right.
But I made a decision a couple weeks ago to get myself into a project, and I had to use that extra week to get started on this little project. Otherwise, it would never get mapped out. So that's why I did that. If you can understand the Kabuki language.
Yep. I do. Well, we missed you dearly. Just some quick observations from all this alignment movement and suggestions. It really appears that future alignments will be decided or guided by both ESPN and Fox, because it's all about the media money. Secondly, it makes sense for Notre Dame to just sit still, because I looked at who is bringing in the money, and behind Michigan, Georgia, Texas, number four is Notre Dame. So they're not leaving much on the table if they wait a couple more years. Plus, they have a better opportunity to get in the playoffs as an independent. Third item is Washington, Oregon. Football-wise, they make good revenue, number 15 and 20 in the nation, but there's no media, TV media market. I cannot see the Big Ten wanting to acquire, or let's put it bluntly, share $100 million each with those two teams. They're just not a TV market.
Let me say this about TV markets. I think, and you heard one of our guests a minute ago allude to Kansas City and Missouri. I think that is somewhat antiquated in thought process, because it's not so much about the TV market. It's about the brand of the individual school. And, yeah, most of them have television markets, but, you know, Ohio State and many others are not as tethered to, you know, large metropolitan cities. And I mean, that was, I don't know, I was about to say that was the SEC's mistake. I'm not saying it was, but when the SEC brought in Missouri, they did it specifically for the television markets. Now, why did they do that? Because they were in the cable business back then. They're not in the cable
right.
business is not part of this equation any longer.
That makes sense. Where do you think
what's part of the equation now are just pure numbers. And Alabama is not connected to a large city, but Alabama is a brand name, and they matter when it comes to television ratings.
That makes sense. Where do you think Washington and Oregon are going to end up? Because they're between a rock and a hard place. Either they save the Pac-10 or they become part of the Big 12.
Yeah, I think you're going to hear some news about that in the upcoming days. And I'm not 100% sure. There are those who are arguing the Big 12 is going to be really a really good conference. I'm nowhere near that opinion. But I still think it's a two-horse race. And I think what the commissioner said earlier was right, but I still think Notre Dame is sitting there just taking their time because they have the time. But everyone else knows. Here are the schools that are most desperate, and you know where I'm going here. It's the ACC schools.
Yep.
Clemson wants out. I mean, that's not Florida State wants out. North Carolina's in play. Virginia or Virginia Tech are in play. These schools are not going to be able to sit tight with where they are. Now, even without Notre Dame, I think once you get the bug, remember Oklahoma and Texas A&M caught the SEC bug a couple of years earlier. I had somebody tell me the other night that A&M really, once they flirted with the SEC, were going to get in the SEC. It just took about 2 years longer than they wanted to do it on their terms. They didn't want to be rushed into it.
Well, they're going to need a good attorney, the ACC teams, to get out of that grants and rights.
Well, they will, but ultimately, there's a commonality there, and that's ESPN.
Hey, one last comment. I was not impressed with the new Big 12 commissioner. He seemed to talk about himself, what he's accomplished, what he knows, who he knows. But I really feel bad for the Pac-10 commissioner, because the only two things he's accomplished is to close down the offices and have everyone work from home. And then secondly, 3 weeks before the separation of USC and UCLA, he said, we're all rowing the boat together.
Do you know where he was when he got word that USC and UCLA were coming into the league? He was in London. So,
that was the Big Ten.
I'm not trying to. He's getting a lot of credit, but I don't know if he had anything to do with it.
No, they just take phone calls.
Well done, John. We'll talk soon.
Welcome back.
You got it, Pat in Georgia. You are next up.
Hey, Paul. Welcome back. I missed you.
Thank you very much. I missed all of you.
I listened to – I know how good a head coach Brian Kelly is. I know his record at Notre Dame and also as an active head football coach. And he's qualified to be the head football coach at LSU. There's no question about that. I listened very intently to his press conference today. I had both ears wide open. I heard, this is just my perception, I heard a lot of I's, I heard a lot of me's, I didn't hear a whole lot of we's or LSU's. At least twice, I thought he said that
he's a pronoun freak.
Well, at least twice, I thought I heard him say he was there to resurrect the LSU football program.
Yeah. Does Brian know they won the national championship 3 years ago?
Well, he probably does. And my overall, this is just my perception, all right? But my overall thought, and I was really interested in what the man had to say, he came to that press conference with the idea, I'm God's gift from Notre Dame to the SEC. Am I being too harsh?
I think that's his personality.
Well, there are some people in your life that you want to have that you want them to have a very strong personality and a very good ego, a brain surgeon, an airline captain. Perhaps their head, that's what a head football coach needs.
Yeah, let me assure you, doctors have big egos. Don't ask me how I know.
Well, I know how you know, and my dad was a surgeon, so I know a lot of doctors.
I say that joking because my wife, when it comes to everything other than medicine, there wouldn't be enough room for both of us in the house. But there are, and I say this with affection for their skill, and you understand it, but there's no more arrogant group of people in the world than surgeons.
No, absolutely, and I wouldn't have it any other way if someone's going to cut on me.
No, I mean, yeah, I want somebody if it's a triage situation. I don't want the guy going. Let me check here. I got a phone call. I mean, I want that guy just telling everybody get out of the room. Let me cut this guy open and put him back together again.
Absolutely,
we could have used a few of those in a certain Texas city about 2 months ago.
No, absolutely, and what happened, what was announced yesterday, was terrible.
One of the truly disturbing days I think in modern American history when it comes to.
No.
And I know that the tendency is always to give credit to law enforcement because they are, after all, protect and serve, but not this time around. Hey, thanks for the call. We're up against a break.